Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. You may have heard something about the federal Real ID Act, but you might not know how soon it will affect you. Without a Real ID, you won't be able to enter a federal facility, like Jay Bear or the federal building downtown, starting in June. By next January, you won't be able to fly on a commercial airplane without one. The law imposing these Real IDs isn't new. It passed the U.S. Congress back in 2005. But deadlines have been extended repeatedly. Many states, including Alaska, have fought the requirement. Now two bills before the state legislature, one in the House and one in the Senate, are designed to bring Alaska into compliance. So why is Real ID so controversial? And assuming it stays in effect and those dates we mentioned hold, what do you as a citizen need to know about Real ID? That's our topic on Hometown Alaska today. Now, Real ID is a U.S. Department of Homeland Security program. I want you to know that I invited a spokesperson from the agency to join us today, and I was turned down. The D.C. Public Affairs Office replied that no one in Alaska was available to answer Real ID questions. She referred me to a web FAQ site, which I have certainly included in our web links on today's web promo at alaskapublic.org. So for expertise on Real ID, we are actually going to our own DMV offices here in Alaska. We have the DMV director, Marla Thompson. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting us.
And I have to say thank you for alerting me to how important this topic was, because we had you on the show in January for traffic court, as I recall. And you said, boy, you know, this is an important topic. And so I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Marla, for bringing that up. And we also have the deputy director, Amy Johnson. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
And welcome.
Thank you.
As I understand it, you are the senior member of this team. That's why you're here, because
yes,
you've been around a bit longer. Marla's relatively new, but on top of it. We also have a guest coming to us from Veterans Affairs, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, Brian Duffy. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, thank you.
And you were a sort of, not a last-minute guest, but sort of close to showtime, and I really appreciate that you're here, because you have been a commander out at Jay Bear. You understand the implications of this for the many people who work on the base, so it's great to have you here.
Thanks again. I appreciate the opportunity to participate.
Okay. So I also want to let folks know this is a good time to ask questions. You can give us a call at 550-8433 or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we'd love to answer your questions. It's a big change. It's an important change. And you really, really do need to know how you're going to handle it, because the dates are coming up. So I thought we'd start with talking about what Real ID is. It's a federal law. It was passed in 2005, as we said. There have been many extensions. First of all, regulations had to be written. It just took time. But we really are upon some deadlines. I mentioned them in the introduction. June, I think, 7 is the first date that you would require, we'd be required to have June 6. Early June, keep that in mind. To get on the base, whether that was to deliver groceries or your children to school or to go to work at one of the schools or some of the other businesses that are on the base. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. I also want to make sure folks know that we've got a lot of resources on alaskapublic.org under Hometown Alaska, including lots of FAQs from our own Department of Motor Vehicles, because they're right at the forefront of this. I mean, implementation has become your responsibility, in a way. If the state goes down this road, it will fall to DMV.
Absolutely. That's our job, is to take what is a rules and given to us and then implement it for all Alaskans.
I know. And it is a bit stunning to think that they're called driver's licenses, to get permission to drive a vehicle. And yet it sounds like they're out of necessity, they're morphing into something quite a bit different, which is not, you know, anybody's opinion here. It's just mine. But it just seems like this is one way we get permission to do something, and other things are being attached to it as required by the federal government. So let's see. What else do we need to tell people about Real ID? Actually, in our own state legislature, there are two bills. It's HB34 and SB64?
SB34 and HB74.
Okay. These were put in by the governor.
Yes.
And I'm going to go ahead and let Marla explain mm-hmm. them, because they are designed to give citizens an option.
Absolutely. We believe that citizens need to have an option. So you could have a compliant ID, which would be a real ID, or you could have a non-compliant card. So that would be the same kind of card that you have today, whether it be a driver's license or an ID.
A state ID card.
Just a state ID card. If you have a real ID card, it'll have a little star on it that says it's a real ID, and it'll go through the real ID process. If it's non-compliant, then it'll say not for federal ID. So
it will be those words will be right
on there.
Okay.
So people will have an option of what they want. And both bills are just talk about repealing the bill that says we're not allowed to spend any money for implementation of the Real ID Act. So mm-hmm. without that, it's all moot. We need to be able to do that to produce the cards.
So that's an important point about spending money, because mm-hmm. Let's just talk a little bit about that bill that was passed in 2008, I think. There were a number of sponsors, and it essentially said no state assets can be spent on this federal program. Am I right?
That's right.
So I'd like to welcome Senator Bill Welikowski on. I alerted him that we were going to have this topic, and I knew that he was one of the sponsors of that bill. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hi. Great. Thanks for having me.
We were just talking a little bit about cost, and I thought since you were on the phone already, I'd just bring you on and let you talk about it, because that was kind of the essence of that 2008 bill. Can you talk about why you and other legislators put that forward?
Yeah, this really started to explode around the time I got elected in 2006, and then I kept hearing more about it from constituents, and people were concerned. You know, at the time that it passed, there were all kinds of provisions for possibly putting in RFID chips into the licenses so that they could, you know, track your whereabouts. And there was just a lot of concern that it would get plugged into a national database, which was handled at sometimes, and I think maybe even today, by some international firms, and real concerns over privacy. And you know, it's just fundamentally the federal government coming in with an unfunded mandate and saying, we're going to turn your DMV stations, your Department of Motor Vehicle stations, into de facto immigration offices. And we're not going to pay for it. The state has to pay for it. And I think a lot of Alaskans were offended by that. Alaskans really cherish our privacy. We're one of the only states in the country, I think the only state in the country, that has a specific privacy provision in our Constitution. And so there was a lot of pushback, and it passed overwhelmingly. I think the final vote was 59-1. And bipartisan support, co-sponsors on both sides, and you know, a lot of states, quite frankly, took that action. We were at the forefront. We were one of the first few states that did that. But other states joined in the resistance of fighting Real ID.
I mean, I understand that the legislation that the governor's put in would rescind that statute that prohibits us from spending any money on Real ID. And citizens are getting sort of up against a rock and a hard place here, where if they want to go into a federal building, or if they want to take a plane trip, they're going to need a real ID, or they're going to have other equivalents like passports, things like that. So, I mean, do you think you're going to continue to resist, or do you have any other ideas about how to deal with this, or it's kind of coming down to the 11th hour here. What do you think? What's your view of how to proceed?
Well, it's frustrating. I think more than anything else, people down here are frustrated. I just had a representative over in the House of Reps come by and see me and said, "Boy, they're hearing from their constituents who are furious about Real ID, and they don't want to see any changes at all." And so I'm seeing a divide form, where there's certainly a lot of legislators who are hearing from their constituents, no, we're not going to back down from the federal government. You know, you've got I think 23 or 25 states that are in the same situation as Alaska is right now, and are still not Real ID compliant. And so you know, there's still a lot of desire out there to continue to fight this, which is, I get that. You know, that's Alaskan, right?
We
one thing we certainly don't like is to back down from the federal government.
Well, I did really wonder about that, the constitution in the state and that privacy. It's I think Article 1, Section something that says, you know, that really stands up for personal privacy. And this seems like, how can this go forward, I guess?
Well, you said it before, but this is talking about someone's ability to drive. And the only thing that, you know, states, this has been under the state's jurisdiction, if you will, for, you know, as long as we've had cars and as long as we've had driver's license, every state has, you know, issues their own state-issued driver's licenses. And so, you know, from my perspective, why do you have to go down and register with the federal government and get a special ID just so you can drive a car?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of preposterous.
But what will happen to Alaska citizens if we don't deal with this? I mean, it can take a while to get a passport, and perhaps not everybody can get a passport. So it kind of it's kind of things rolling downhill, it feels like. What do you think? I mean, you think legislators will just kind of weigh the impact on their constituents versus privacy? What do you think?
Yeah, we're going to weigh all that. And you know, I think, I mean, the legislation that's been put forward, I think, is certainly not an unreasonable solution. It's going to cost money. I think that's important for people to understand, is that this is not free. You know, the only thing we said with our bill was, federal government, if you want to go ahead and implement Real ID, you can do it. We're just not going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are being forced to pay for it. It will cost, I think the estimate's around $1.5 million per year.
Yes. So. I think I said, I saw that. I saw a total of $9.9 billion, $3.9 billion cost to the states, $5.8 billion cost to individuals, $0.2 billion cost to federal government and private sector. Now this, I'm not sure these are opinion pieces that I have read. But you're right to make the point of cost. Certainly some people are concerned that since everybody is supposed to have a Real ID, people who've had a license for a long time will have to be coming in to get a Real ID. You know, sort of long lines, more money, you know. And I guess I'm going to jump over to Marla and ask you, I mean, you must, because you're planning for the event that you might have to implement Real ID, you know, how are you dealing with things like cost, things like lines, things like what will it cost the average citizen?
So those are great questions. We have a fiscal note in with the bills, and it's $1.5 million one time to set up the systems that allow us to connect to everything that we need to do to get it done. So that's a one-time fee. And then we don't feel that Alaskans should spend a whole lot of money, but to cover the cost of the ID, it would be $5 if you wanted to have a Real ID. So it's not spread out to everybody. It's $5 more on top of what you're already paying.
Mm-hmm.
And that really just is the ongoing cost for us to produce those.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. So you're not predicting, I mean, the state's in a pretty tight fiscal situation already, and so adding $1.5 billion to cover Real ID is a serious thing.
Yeah, $1.5 million.
Yes, $1.5 million.
Yeah. It does, but we need to, that's what it costs to do the business, and we need to move to be able to do that. We also need to be able to have enough time. So when the final turn is October 1st, 2020, we have between now and 2020 to get everybody new, or whoever wants them, Real IDs or driver's license.
Right.
So, you know, needs enough time for us to finish our systems, get them updated, test them, and then we have enough time for people to actually get the actual ID.
Sure. Okay. Well, Bill, I just want to, we're going to be talking about this for the whole hour, and I know that you had a committee meeting you were headed into, so I don't want to make you stay on, but is there anything else you want to leave us with?
It's just frustrating. I think it's just real frustrating for legislators, and it is $1.5 million this year, but you know, there's a few hundred thousand Alaskans that have driver's license, and so $5 every time they got to go. I mean, that money adds up for Alaskans. And what you're really paying for you're paying the federal government for the privilege of letting them put your ID into a national database that is then accessible to people all across the country and probably people all across the world. And I think that's something Alaskans find offensive, you know. So hopefully we can come up with a solution. It's real frustrating. You know, the best solution would be for our federal congressional delegation to put an end to this, or the president to say, you know what, we respect Americans' privacy, and we think this is a bad idea. I mean, that's really the solution. We're dependent on the federal government, on our congressional delegation to put a stop to this. They can do it. They can stop it. That's where I'd urge people to focus their energy at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you anticipate lawsuits based on the Alaska Constitution if in fact that bill passes and Real ID moves forward in Alaska? I mean, would we be beginning certain litigation? Not you personally, but would it open up the state to that kind of litigation?
It's a good question. We've got a very strong right to privacy in this state, and to the extent that gathering up everyone's information and putting it into a big national database, could that be a violation of that? If there's a federal requirement to do so, I think it'd be a tough case, but there's some pretty creative lawyers out there, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, thank you very much. Senator Wilikowski, thank you for taking the time to call in. I figured this was important to you because you were one of the sponsors of that 2008 bill that said no state funds spent on this at this point. Thanks a lot, and I appreciate your time. And I'm going to actually go over to Tom Ross. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Tom. He's gone? Okay. Then I want to go to Brian Duffy because I'm pretty sure what Tom Ross was going to talk about was they have employees that would be impacted by this. Oh, we do have Tom Ross. Hi, Tom.
Hello. This is Tom Ross. I'm the chief operating officer from the Anchorage School District.
Thanks.
Thanks
for joining us on Hometown Alaska. We were having a discussion on Real ID, and I learned from doing a little bit of research that the school district, you might not think would be impacted by Real ID, but as it turns out, because it affects ability to enter federal facilities, you might be. So why don't you tell us how the school district would be impacted?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the question. Just to provide some context, the school district, when this is fully implemented on the 6th of June, the school district has 5 elementary schools on the base, 2 on the Richardson side and 3 on the Elmendorf side. We also have our information technology department currently occupying what used to be Kennedy Elementary School. So we've got a significant presence on the base right now, but if you expand that out to perform our education mission on JBEAR, we have busing staff, we have maintenance, custodial personnel that have to have access onto to the base. So we've got some pretty significant interest in the final outcome of this legislation.
Is the school district supporting the legislation? You just want to make it work for your employees, or are you resisting the legislation?
No, we're not. We're not resisting the legislation. I mean, frankly, from our perspective, you know, the Real ID Act. I mean, that's federal law, and I fully expect that the Air Base Wing on JBEAR will implement that law effective 6th of June. So
we're working toward it.
Science, absolutely.
Okay.
But, I mean, I understand that from the individual's perspective, from the teachers, from all the staff that I've mentioned, it really is it's an individual responsibility, and it's incumbent on them to ensure that they have a Real ID compliant identification in order for us to perform our mission, our critical mission to support the families and the students on the base.
Okay. Well, that makes me think we should definitely talk about what it's going to take to get a Real ID so that people know how much time to, you know, right now you can't, right?
You can. I mean, there are some things, if for example, you have an identification from a state that's compliant with Real ID, that's acceptable. If you have a military retiree identification card, that's also acceptable. But for those that don't, it really does somewhat oblige them to go after either a passport or a passport card from the State Department. So that's the individual responsibility that we're really going to require from our employees in order to meet this mission, unless the state takes measured steps to be compliant with the law.
Okay, which is a compliant real ID,
correct?
So,
as I understand it, it really and the governor has made some measured steps that resulted in this extension to the implementation, but it's not like again, as I understand it, it's not necessarily a distinctly different identification card. I know that the state is looking at both real ID compliant identification that people can acquire and then not. But as I'm understanding, it's really how the states are complying with the background checks and other requirements that are a component of the Real ID Act that makes the identification, once that standard is met, that makes the identification Real ID compliant.
Okay, well, we'll explore that a little bit more fully here on the air. I do want to read a quick email because I think a lot of people might have this mm-hmm. question. It's a quick one to answer. Lynn writes, if I have a passport, do I still need a real ID?
No.
No. That's a simple answer.
Unless you want one. And really, that's if somebody wants to have a real ID, because it's going to fit in their wallet a little bit quicker and easier than a passport. But it's totally up to them. If they already have a passport, that is going to be, that's on the TSA list. That's an approved document that's already there.
They would need a driver's license in the state, right? But they could get a non-real ID compliant driver's license if they wanted to drive. So those were the two things you would need. To drive around, you'd need an ID. A driver's license, mm-hmm. And to fly or to go into a federal facility, a passport would get you in there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think that might reassure mm-hmm. some people who have passports. Okay, I'm going to rely on my passport or I have a choice. I can.
And we're trying to keep the cost low so mm-hmm. people can just make that decision. You know, I would want something that's going to fit in my wallet.
Yeah. Right? The thought of losing your passport is kind of a scary thing.
It's frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. So something as small as an ID card. And the truth is, to get a passport, you have to deliver the same level of documentation that a real ID would require. I know you're not from the State Department.
No, we did a little research on that. And so there's varying degrees of different kinds of IDs you can get. And the passport, you can get a passport, but you're going to have to send your birth certificate, your primary documentation, in the mail.
And to get a passport.
And then to get it back.
Whereas to go to the DMV and apply, if we do get real ID here, mm-hmm. I would just bring those documents down to
correct.
You and you would scan them in?
Correct. We're just going to take your information and we're going to verify that that information is correct. So we're only keeping the documents that you present and we're only verifying that those documents are the right documents and that they're valid. If you present them, we're not creating a database to, if you didn't come in with a passport, I will have no idea that you have a passport. If you do come in with a birth certificate, then I'm going to verify that that's a valid birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the difference between what we do today and what we're going to do.
Okay. One other question. I read, getting ready for this, okay, they're going to scan your documents in and they're going to keep the digital images or paper images of that for a period of time. Do you already do that?
We do.
Okay, so that doesn't really change anything.
No.
Okay. Okay. You know, now I want to go over to Brian, just because we did hear from the school district and Tom Ross about a lot of interesting things like individual responsibility to take care of this and make your own decision as we wait to see what the Alaska legislature is going to do, whether Alaska is going to have the choice of compliant or non-compliant IDs. I want you, Brian, to tell us a little bit more about the impact on J-Bear.
Sure, and I won't speak for the installation commander. I had served in that capacity from 2012 to 14 and retired from the Air Force at the end of October. What I would offer to the audience is the installation, based on my discussions with base officials, is complying with the Real ID provisions now. There are five states whose opportunity to seek redress has expired, and that's Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, and Washington. So for those five states, people that produce identification and wish to have unescorted access on the base, if they provide that as their primary form of identification, they're not going to be allowed on the installation. The exception is Minnesota and Washington do have an enhanced driver's license, and that is a suitable form of identification for unescorted access.
Okay, but not for aviation purposes? Is an enhanced
license? It is for TSA. Yes, they could still use that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between the real ID and the enhanced ID?
The enhanced ID actually has a chip in it. So just like your passport does, it's going to have a chip. So it's a little bit in between. And you can use it to go to Canada or Bermuda.
Mexico?
Mexico.
Yes. Mexico. So those places close to us.
Close to us.
So it has the same kind of chip as a passport does. Alaska chose not to offer that. Is that right? We're not going down that road of the enhanced.
We're not.
Okay. No. We're either going to do a non-compliant or a compliant.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. We've been talking a lot, and I just want to remind folks, if they're like, well, what are they talking about? It's the Real ID, which is a federal program that requires basically driver's licenses that comply with federal requirements. That's what it means. And there's a lot of federal requirements, and we'll talk some more about that. But there are dates that impact Alaskans, which is June 6th, your ability to go to J-Bear. If you work there, if you drop your children off there, if you work for the school district there, at that point, you will have to produce the kind of identification that lets you get on the base.
That's right, Kathy. That can take the form of the Real ID that the state will work its way towards if, in fact, that legislation is passed and allows it, or there's several other forms of identification which are also acceptable.
Would you list those again? You did once, but just go ahead and...
Sure. As an example, and based on, again, information I've received from the installation, it includes passports, much as we've talked before, permanent resident cards or alien registration receipt cards. It lists here foreign passports with a temporary I-551 stamp, and there are about four or five others that are
okay.
In that game.
All right. So obviously the June 6th date is not important if the state, you know, they cannot have a real ID. They will have to use some other form of ID, though, right? So a passport or by June 6th.
Well, actually, if we pass legislation, and then we can ask for an extension. And so we would get another extension from Homeland Security, and that really gets us through the next bubbles of dates. So it's another, because they know that once we do it, we're still going to have to put it
right,
in place.
Right.
And, you know, DMV is going through a database conversion right now and won't even be done until the end of this year. So next project won't even start till next year. So best case, late next year.
Okay. So essentially passing this legislation would allow us to get another extension.
Yeah, we need another extension to get to the extension.
So it's not wrong to say that June 6th is an important date.
It's very important.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've got another email here that I'd just like to get in, and then we'll take a quick break and come back. If I already have an Alaska driver's license, what will I need to present to DMV for a Real ID? Does the Real ID database include Social Security numbers? Other than that, I bet Amazon has more information about me than Real ID will have. Good question, Tom. Okay, tackle that one.
I'm going to let Amy tackle that one. She's the expert on the documentation.
So for that one, if you already have a current driver's license and you want to upgrade to a Real ID, you will need to bring in the actual documents again, even if you presented them the first time, to prove who you are. So you could bring in like an original U.S. birth certificate. You could use a passport or a passport card, a foreign passport, a resident alien card. Military identification card would also work. Mm-hmm. So those would be the type of things that you could use.
Just one of them.
To bring in. You would need one of those, and then you would need a secondary documentation. Like you could, if you have an Indian Affairs card, you could use that for your second form of identification, a voter's registration card, a TWIC card. So there's a list of different information that you'd be able to use to provide as your secondary document too. But you would need to bring those documents in. The first time you get a Real ID, after you've already got your Real ID to renew it, you would not need to present those documents again, just the initial time.
Okay. And are you going to jump in?
I was going to jump in and say right now our current driver's license and IDs are good for 5 years, and we want to extend that to 8 years. So even with a Real ID or a non-compliant ID or driver's license, they'll go for 8, and then you can do one renewal online. So basically, we're extending that out, and it's going to cost Alaskans less money.
Well, good. Okay.
It's a bonus. Goodness.
That's good. Well, it's the silver lining here, right? All right. Well, you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I have Marla Thompson, director of the Alaska DMV, on with me, and Amy Johnson, the deputy director of Alaska DMV, and Brian Duffy, who's with Administrative Services and the director of DMVA, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, and with lots of experience on the military side of getting along with all these programs. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic is Real ID, and it is a federal program that the states are wrestling with. And in Alaska, well, it passed the Congress in 2005, but there's been many extensions, but there are some real deadlines that are coming down upon us here in Alaska. We talked a little bit in the first half hour about two bills before the legislature that would allow the state of Alaska to offer compliant real IDs that would, you know, be in compliance with the federal requirements, but Alaskans would have a second choice, which would be to go ahead and get a non-compliant driver's license. And that would work, except that if they want to go onto a federal facility like the base, or maybe to see your congressman in a federal building or to go to court, any kind of federal building, that non-compliant ID would not get you in anymore. You would need to accompany it with another piece of identification. It could be a passport. It could be a military ID. It could be a voter's card. Am I right? We talked a little bit about that. So it's a choice people have before them if the state legislature chooses to pass those laws. Mm-hmm. Did I get that right?
You did.
So I want to welcome back my guests, Marla Thompson, director of the Alaska Department of Motor Vehicles, Amy Johnson, deputy director for the Alaska Department of Motor Vehicles. They're important here because in the states, they are the agencies that have been tasked with upgrading driver's licenses. And as we talked, driver's licenses used to be just permission to drive, but now it seems like it's becoming bigger. So it is the state DMVs that need to do that. And we also have Brian Duffy with us from Alaska Military and Veteran Affairs, and kind of speaking to us a little bit from the perspective of the military base. You know, Brian, we never gave you a chance at the start to talk about the numbers of people who come on the base. Let me just throw out our phone numbers for listeners, because, again, I think this is a fairly hot topic and people may have questions for the three of you. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we do welcome an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Brian, let's just talk a little bit about the impact there on the base.
Sure. And speaking with base officials, they estimate approximately 14,000 contractors and local service providers may be affected by this change in identification requirement as we move forward. So I think, again, that they've done a great job in implementing the standards already. And as we mentioned previously, there are five states that are already beyond their redress point. Their expiration or their extensions have expired, and the base has implemented procedures now wherein if you have identification from Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, or Washington, that's not going to be sufficient to allow you unescorted access to the installation. So if and when 6 June comes and the legislation either acts or doesn't, Alaska will simply be another state that the installation will have to work its way through.
Which means requiring another form of ID.
That's right. And there are a number of other forms of ID which are equally suitable, and we mentioned some of them before, passports, passport cards, resident alien cards, and the like. And the installations put that word out.
So what other businesses are out there? The school district, we heard there's 5 schools. Their IT department is out there. Are there other commercial entities out there?
So there are about 50 different mission partners that are on the installation. Some are private, some are public, some are state, some are federal. And each one will have a bit of a nuance in how they navigate the access requirements. But I would agree with the previous caller, Tom Roth, in that at the end of the day, it becomes an individual responsibility for the person seeking access to work out the identification requirements to satisfy that need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I imagine that's the base has to, I mean, you cannot become the facility that provides, okay, here's your passport application, or you need 6 weeks to get your, you can't do that. So it's the individual's responsibility. But there are a lot of Alaskans who probably have military identification, who might have voter registration cards, might have, was it BIA cards that you mentioned, Amy?
So those are going to be more of the secondary document. They're still going to need a primary document, which would be more along the lines of the passport card, TWIC. I did see Bureau, for TSA has a similar list, military ID, border crossing cards, permanent resident cards. Most of those are things that have a photo ID on them.
And they can be primary, you're saying, after June 6th, if we do not yet have a real ID, or if you've chosen to get a non-compliant ID, you would still need these other primary. Okay. I'm going to take some callers. Let's see. We've got so many coming in. We've got to take a second. Let's see.
They're all calling to talk to Brian.
Okay. they didn't specify you, Brian, but I'd like to welcome Aves Thompson on from Trucking Association Director. Hi, Aves.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. This is an interesting program. Hi, Marla.
Hey.
you're aware of the real ID coming down the pike, and that's why you're on the phone. What do you have a question or a comment about it, Aves?
Yeah, we have some passing acquaintance with the issue because DMV's webpage shows a total of nearly 33,000 Alaska commercial driver's license holders in the state of Alaska. And many of our drivers have need to access federal installations, Fort Richardson, Elmendorf, Jay Bear, Wainwright, and others. And after June 6th, their state-issued driver's license will not be acceptable as an ID to allow unescorted access onto the military installation. Many of our drivers have, at least in the Anchorage area, have what's called a transportation worker identification card that's issued through TSA, and which allows them sort of unfettered access to the ports. But we have drivers in the interior, for example, who don't have need for a TWIC card. So in the absence of a real ID compliant state-issued commercial driver's license, they'd be unable to enter the military installations without an additional form such as passport or some of the other IDs that you have described earlier.
So are you getting your drivers ready? I mean, I guess they may have some forms that carry them through, but that you may have drivers that don't. And I guess I'm asking that because when we were talking to the school district, they suggested it was personal responsibility to get done what needs to get done for your job. How are you dealing with all these people in your professional association?
Well, if the legislation passes, we would expect that there'd be some ramp-up time to allow us to get real ID compliant commercial driver's license through the DMV. If the legislation does not pass, then we'll be forced to go get some other kind of identification, passport or other. Mm-hmm. So it's, this is an interesting battle. There's, and we think that the compromise between, or the compromise by allowing both a compliant and a non-compliant driver's license solves the issue of federal overreach and privacy and everything else. Because as I understand the program, DMV will not be creating or reaching into any new databases, simply going and verifying information in existing databases.
Mm-hmm. We'll go over that. We will talk about that because as the second half hour unrolls, I'll bring up some of the issues that are being raised out in the public dialogue about concerns about this, and we'll talk about databases. That's a good suggestion from you.
Just one last thought, if I might.
Yes.
Our drivers are in and out of military bases each and every day. They deliver groceries, fuel, equipment, potato chips, beer, all those essential things to keep a small city going. So in the absence of this legislation, why we think that we'll put these folks in a real hardship, and we hope that the legislature sees the wisdom in passing the laws as proposed.
Okay, thanks, Aves. I appreciate your calling in and giving that perspective. That's very helpful.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome Roy on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Roy.
Hi, how are you? He pretty much had the same question I had. The DMV right now has our either a passport or a birth certificate whenever we do get a commercial driver's license. Will we be able to just go in and get one updated, or is this going to have to be something that we're going to have to do new?
That's a good question. Yes, everybody will have to come in one time for the real ID. Now, CDL drivers do come in already.
Commercial driver's license.
Just started coming in October of this past year and bringing in all of this information. And so we're working on process and how that's all going to play out. But they already have to bring in a passport or a birth certificate now to make any changes or do updates on their CDL, their commercial driver's license.
Right, so I've already done that in October.
Oh, okay.
I was just wondering if I needed to do that again.
We don't think so, but we're not positive at this moment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I've got another email. Let me do this one. This is from Martin, and he says, did I understand correctly that for entry to a federal facility, a non-compliant ID such as our existing driver's licenses, supplemented by something as simple as a voter ID, will be adequate? Shaking heads no here. Would this also work for boarding aircraft? Let's help Martin, because I'm sure if he's got the question, there's other people that have that question.
So no, he's not going to be able to go through that. So the federal list, I think you've got a great list.
So to access a federal installation as an example of a federal facility, there are other alternatives such as, and I did fail to mention a retired military ID card and an active duty ID card can certainly work. A dependent ID card can work. But other things would include U.S. passports, U.S. passports cards, permanent resident cards or alien registration receipt cards, a form I-766, foreign passports with temporary stamp, that's an I-551, an employment authorization document that contains a photograph, another form of I-766, and there's a list of about four or five others that are.
So I probably misled people by mentioning that voter ID card. What is that? Why was that? Why did we talk about that?
That was a form of identification that they would need to show as a secondary document to come in to get the real ID.
Okay.
And to the
not to
DMV.
Enter a,
not
to enter a
it's not a substitution.
Facility.
Correct.
Secondary to going in. With a primary thing like your
birth certificate.
What about your existing Alaska ID?
Your existing Alaska ID would be your secondary ID. So you can bring that in as your secondary ID.
So you're going to need something like a birth certificate, passport,
yes.
Military ID?
Military ID would work for primary, yes.
Global entry? You know global entry cards?
No, I think TWIC would work.
TWIC is secondary form.
Secondary, okay.
So because we've been throwing around all these, you know, cards that people have, is there a place on the web where you can read, these are the primary, it's because there's two things going on here, getting a real ID and getting onto a federal facility if you don't have a real ID, because the state doesn't decide to go that route, or we don't have them ready yet, whatever, that's where you're going to have secondary.
That's right. So what I got from base officials, again, is a link to a department, a federal department, U.S. Department of Homeland Security website, https://www.dhs.gov. And if you continue to drill that down, there's a /real-id-enforcement-brief, and that should contain additional information on the suitable credentials to satisfy the Real ID requirement as an alternative to a Real ID compliant driver's license.
Okay.
And for the DMV, you'd go to our DMV site, website, and fabulous sites. Go to all of our different documents, and you can click on My First ID, My First Driver's License, and right there it'll list all the documents that are required
today.
Okay.
I think we've got both of those links, at least the entry link, and people may have to drill down a little bit, but we've got it for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Real ID, and we have it for the Alaska Department of Motor Vehicles Real ID. So you can go to alaskapublic.org and drill down, or go to your respective websites. So we've got another caller, so I would like to go ahead and welcome Jessica onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Jessica.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. So from listening to the show, what I understand is that by 6 June, we're required to have these real IDs in order to get on post. But then I was under the impression that we won't be able to get these real IDs, or there's only one way to get them unless you have a passport, or I'm really confused at the whole process of getting these real ID cards. Like, when can you get them? And if we're expected to have them by June 6th, when are they going to be available?
They probably will not be available, but even if the state passes those two bills or one of them, or they go to conference and pass a bill that says we can spend state resources on Real ID, and we Alaskans have a choice for a compliant or a non-compliant ID card, we won't have those by June 6th.
No, but what we will do is we'll have an extension with the Homeland Security. So once we are going in the right direction for Homeland Security, they will give you an extension. Like, there's 17 other states that have extensions. And so those will get us through to the next dates. If we don't have that that extension, then June 6th would be the date that you would need it on the base, and January 22nd, 2018, so that'll be when TSA comes into play. So at that point, you need to have that to be able to fly.
So I guess it's confusing, Jessica. You're right, because there's different scenarios at play here, and we're not yet sure which one we're going to go down. But I hope
as a teacher, it makes it a little bit difficult. If you're an IT or teacher on post, and you're expected to have this by 6 June, and they're not going to be available, and, I mean, it does take time to get a passport. The last time I checked, it took 3 months to get my passport. So I'm just curious for all the other teachers and IT people out there, how is that going to work?
Mm-hmm. Well, it means you're going to need secondary ID on January, June 6th. You're going to need that additional ID.
Yeah, and Jessica, what I would say is please ensure you're staying in contact with the ASD leadership. Tom Roth's office can provide additional guidance on actions that the ASD employees should take, and I will guarantee it'll be compliant with the federal requirements that are laying out.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling. Did we get your questions answered?
I think so. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jessica. We've got about 12 minutes left, so I'm going to just put our number out one more time. And we've got another, let's see, there's another email coming in from Cherie. Why is the legislature putting the DMV in such a bind by procrastinating on passing these bills for the Real ID? Well, I don't know that they're intentionally trying to put anybody in a bind. You know, there are issues around, there's strong feelings around Real ID. I mean, and the DMV is not pro or con, they just want to comply with whatever is required of them. So they're not here defending Real ID or, you know.
Nope. Either way, we will continue
just want Alaskans to be able to do what they need to do.
Right.
But there are people out in that wider world that are really unhappy about this. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those things. One of them was cost. We talked about that a little bit. The state passed a bill in 2008 that said the state can't spend any money on Real ID as a way of not letting the federal government require the state to spend money. this current legislation now proposed to the House and the Senate would rescind that. So that would open the door for the state to become compliant. But as Marla told us, we're probably still going to get another extension.
Yes, because just because we can become compliant doesn't mean that our system is ready to go.
Right.
And our IT would, our IT department needs enough time to really make the documents and ramp up. So it's going to be another year or so for us to even get to the point where we're producing the IDs. But the Homeland Security has that in place, and that's why it's a phased approach of the different dates. So, you know, when January 22nd comes along, that's the next big date for TSA, and then the final date is October 1st, 2020. But
no extensions after October 1st, 2020.
You know, I don't know whether,
Yeah,
no telling.
It's true.
But there are five states right now that don't have an extension. And, you know, Brian was saying Washington State does not have extension. They do have a current bills going through their legislative sessions as well. And so they are trying to produce a real ID, even though they didn't get an extension. So they're having enough discussion about it because people need it. You know, they want some other choices. So they have an enhanced ID that they're going to use.
Let's talk about one of the other controversial ideas is that somehow the DMV is creating a giant big database. And you guys have explained it to me, and I think I get it. So let's do that for the listeners. Basically, our data is already in various databases. You are not creating a new database. You are building bridges to databases where, so that you can confirm our information. Is that right, Amy?
That is correct. Your information for like your birth certificate is already in a database somewhere. All we would be doing is we would be taking the information that you provide to us off of your birth certificate, and we would be just sending it to make sure that it's correct information. So we would get a yes, that's a true document, or
so you
no,
don't go
that's
sorting
not.
Through that other database. You send some specific information, and you get a confirmation back.
Correct. We would send the specific information that you give to us to verify that's correct. We don't have access to the database. We can't look at it. We can only do a little dip into it to verify the information that you provided us is correct about your birth certificate.
So the kind of databases we're talking about would be the passport database?
Correct.
The birth certificate.
Birth certificates.
Perhaps visa databases if you are on a visa here in our country. What other sorts of things are we talking about?
Well, those are the big ones.
Those are the big three ones.
That are new. There's a database for commercial driver's license, and that's already in existence, and we already use that. There's state to state, which you're only allowed to have one driver's license, and I don't know if everybody realizes that.
Is that current
right
now?
That's current,
so
yeah.
So it's not a new deal with real ID.
Right.
We're only allowed to have one.
Right.
And what happens, I think we talked about it before the show, that Brian had one, and you get a hole punched in it, so you can't use it anymore.
Sure. As a personal example, as we moved back up to Alaska after retiring from the military, we went into the DMV at Benson. By the way, kudos to that team. They were very focused on moving customers through the process as swiftly and efficiently as possible, so great job there. But in essence, we surrendered my license presented my license from a previous state. They had a hole punched in it. It was returned to me as it was non-functional now. I couldn't use it. I was given the temporary paper card. And then maybe 14 to 20 days later, got the regular ID and the new driver's license in the mail.
Okay. So that's not new, that you can't have multiple driver's license. People might be thinking, I'll keep my New York driver's license.
Nope, can only have one.
Okay. All right. So this great fear that there is a new giant database, we can set that aside. Now, we did have a email coming in from Tom who said, I think Amazon knows more about me than the DMV does. So let's talk about that, because people feel like, wow, we're in an era where there's so much information out there about me. But you're basically saying DMV is not doing anything different than what commercial entities are doing. We may not like what commercial entities are doing, but you're not doing anything different from what they're doing.
No, and what we would be doing is just reaching out and making sure that that's a valid document. So if you have a passport, is it the right passport number? Is it the right person? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not. If you don't have a passport, I'm not going to be reaching into the passport database to say, give me all that information, because that doesn't happen.
Download everything on Kathleen McCoy.
Can't. No, you have to have. You've got to have enough information to get that. Mm-hmm. And then if, you know, it's the same documents that you're required to bring in today, because mm-hmm. we already do the best practices of making sure that we're not producing cards that are fake. We don't. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that when you have a driver's license or an ID from Alaska DMV, that this is a valid document and it's good. And the Real ID is just giving you a little bit more steps that the states have to go through to make sure that it is valid and all the information is correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about central issuance, which is already in existence. It began in 2014 when Alaska kind of revamped its driver's licenses. A lot of what was done then actually was, as you've been telling me, best practices, but it also sort of aligns us with some of the requirements with Real ID. So let's talk about what those are. The central issuance was one of them. That means our IDs come in the mail to us from, I think, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Mm-hmm. Some company there that mm-hmm. creates them. Why is that a best practice?
Well, the best practice on that is that it's produced, and all of the equipment that makes it, all of the paper, all of the supplies is housed in an area that's kind of like Fort Knox. You know, it's secure, and they have a security, and they are, so it's just like credit cards. When you get a credit card, it doesn't come from the bank immediately. They're going to pop it in the mail to you. It's just like any other, anything
else.
Same kind of systems. It doesn't forward. So if you give us the wrong address, it doesn't go forwarding. Just like a credit card, those don't forward.
Well,
they go right back.
Will I activate it when I open it up like I do a credit card?
No, that's a great idea, but no.
No. So it does make me think, gosh, could it get lost in the mail? Could someone steal them if they come in an envelope that looks like an Alaska ID envelope? I mean, is that a susceptibility, do you think?
You know, we have a tracking system, so people can go online today and type in their number, their driver's license number, and they can see where it is in the process. So that kind of helps us. You know, the driver's license, if they said that they didn't get it, we're going to make them a new one anyways. We're going to
invalidate the old one.
Uh-huh. And it gets marked in a way that it's that. You know, we know which one is the valid one.
Mm-hmm. Another sort of discussion I found online about this is that DMV workers will have to be trained to become almost the same as immigration officers. That's the way sometimes they phrase it. And you're shaking your head no. But those are some of the issues that have been raised, partly because they're going to have to make decisions about documents in front of them. What would you say about that, Amy?
It's not going to be a lot of training for the reps. The reps, all they're going to be doing is taking the information off your birth certificate, and it's just going to go through and say, yes, that's a valid document, or no, it's not.
So not having to stare at a document and say, I wonder if this is real or not. They basically just do that verification?
Correct.
Okay. All right. How about the money side of it? If this right now the state has not spent money on Real ID. It hasn't been allowed to, although we have done some upgrades to our licenses to conform to best practice. What kind of a financial burden is Real ID? Oh my gosh, there's you're off the hook. I know that there's issues around money, but we did talk a little bit about it earlier. So, well, listen, I just have to thank my guests today, Marla Thompson, Director of Alaska DMV, Amy Johnson, Deputy Director of Alaska DMV, and Brian Duffy, Administrative Services Director, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Thank you so much. And actually, a lot of good questions from listeners and callers. I really appreciate that. The point of the show was to bring people up to speed on what they needed to know. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host discussing the Alaska recession, how long and how hard. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Eric Bork is our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.